I'm John Krall. Today on No Limits, in honor of Banned Books Week, we're going to talk about the books that people have tried to ban, challenge, or otherwise suppress. These include classics of literature, beloved children's books, the Bible, and even the dictionary. My guests will be Travis DiNicola of Indy Reads, Deb Lambert of the Indianapolis Public Library, and Corey Michael Dalton of the Kurt Vonnegut Library. Please join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits at WFYI.org, or connecting with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by WGU Indiana, Indiana's 8th state university. Information about earning a degree from WGU, an accredited online nonprofit university, is available at indiana.wgu.edu. And by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about Banned Books Week. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Travis DiNicola, not exactly a stranger to WFYI, is the host of The Art of the Matter and also here representing Indy Reads. Travis, welcome
That's right.
to the program.
John, thank you very much. Hello, it's great to be here. It's great to be live on the radio.
It's good to have you here. Well, you've been, presumably you've been alive. You haven't been, you know, deceased in other capacities. Deb Lambert of the Indianapolis Public Library is here with us too. Deb, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon. I'm excited to be here. This is one of our favorite topics, talking about books.
Good deal. Well, it's one of mine too. And Corey Michael Dalton of the Kurt Vonnegut Library. Corey, welcome to the program.
Thanks very much. I'm happy to be here.
Well, and I probably should start this program by saying that, you know, given that the name of this show is No Limits, normally what we try to do is take a very even hand. But given that the entire premise of our program here is that we can talk about anything, I think we probably have to acknowledge that we are on the side of free expression and full expression on this program. So, you know, I want that out there because I think it's important not to withhold things from the audience. I'd like to talk a little bit, and I'll start with Deb on this. You know, how often do books get banned, and could you give me some background on how Banned Books Week got started?
Well, it's more common than you think, and a lot of the national numbers aren't, you know, gathered in any, you know, official way, but I can tell you that we had 8 challenges in 2012 and 2 so far in 2013. And
what were the 8 in 2012?
They were banned for various reasons, being sexually explicit is the most common one, profanity, violence, drug use, religion. So there's quite a few reasons for it. And it's a celebration of reading and the ability to exercise critical judgment for every individual to select what they want to read. So the libraries have been, you know, fully supportive of this for many years, and it's a great way for us to get the word out that it's not a good thing to coerce what other people think and read.
Mm-hmm. Travis, how is Indy Reads marking Banned Books Week?
Well, what we're doing is actually through our bookstore, Indy Reads Books, down on Mass Ave. We have quite a large display of books that have historically been banned.
What are some of the titles? Well, just so people get an idea.
What we've been doing actually is we've taken each book and we've wrapped it in brown paper, and then we've put a description on the book as far as why it was banned, whether it was for using what was perceived as sexual or racist language, or as Deb mentioned, dealing with religion that some people didn't want. And so when people are buying these books, they don't actually know what the book is. They just know why it was banned. And so if you want to, like, you know, buy a book that maybe, you know, was banned for sexual reasons, then you could pick one up. So that's one of the ways that we've been kind of celebrating this week. It's actually been quite popular with a lot of our customers. I mean, you know, Indy Reads is an organization. is an adult literacy.
So it's kind of a secret and subversive scene.
Oh, yes,
kind of
absolutely.
Thing going on.
But and it's been actually, I mean, it's been interesting for me to see, you know, what it is that the bookstore staff has been putting out there. And you know, it's everything from Mark Twain to J.D. Salinger to, you know, John Green, local author John Green. And seeing which books of, you know, these authors have been banned and why is quite fascinating. Of course, you know, Vonnegut's one of the ones that unfortunately has been top of the list lately.
And Corey, I'll throw that's a cue for you, I think.
Yeah.
How is the Vonnegut Library marking banned books week? And then can we talk a little bit about Kurt's books that have been challenged or banned?
Yeah, the Vonnegut Library this week is doing their second annual Locked Up with Vonnegut, which is a local writer is locked in the front window 24 hours a day, 7 days a week for the entirety of Banned Books Week. And there's a live webcam. You can check it out at vonnegutlibrary.org. This year's volunteer is Hugh Vandeveer, who is a local writer who works with Angie's List as well. And so he's there. He's doing his work from the window. He is writing a short story for the week. He's blogging about it. And then aside from that, they're having authors and celebrities come in for the week and read from banned books every evening for Hugh's bedtime stories. So last night was our First Lady of Indiana. Linda Pence was there reading from...
Karen Pence.
Oh, sorry,
Linda
Karen
Pence is the attorney.
Yeah, well, the Pences. It was a Pence. Okay. Anyway, so she was reading from Harriet the Spy. And I know I got the name Harriet correct. So
you did indeed. You did indeed. Which of Kurt's books?
Slaughterhouse-Five is the big one. One other thing that's going on at the Vonnegut Library this week, too, Hugh is big in the arts community, and he actually had local artists reinterpret the covers of various banned books. So there's original art for sale at the library this week, and covers of things like To Kill a Mockingbird, I think, and Where the Wild Things Are. So that's cool. But yeah, Kurt Vonnegut, a lot of his books have been banned, actually. He did have a little bit of a potty mouth, but the themes behind his books are very important. So Slaughterhouse-Five is probably the most famous one. About 2 years ago in Republic, Missouri, it was banned from the high school. The challenge was brought by a local fella who chose to homeschool his kids but didn't think it was appropriate for any kid in the community to read Slaughterhouse-Five. And so what the Vonnegut Library did, we had to tweak his nose a little bit, and we offered to send free copies of the book to any student at the high school there that just sent us an email or gave us a call or whatever. So we ended up sending around 80 copies of Slaughterhouse-Five to kids in the community. So thanks to that fella.
We are talking about Banned Books Week here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Well, you know, when you look at the names of some of the books that have been challenged, I mean, I was doing some research before I came on here, and you're seeing things, not just to some degree the usual suspects, I mean, in Huckleberry Finn or Slaughterhouse-Five or some of the others where people historically have raised objections, but children's books, Green Eggs and Ham, or which, you know, Ted Cruz just read from the floor of the Senate the other day. You know, can we talk about the scope of the kinds of books that get challenged or banned? Deb?
Yeah, you asked for some titles, and some of the titles this past year. One is a children's sexual health book called It's Perfectly Normal, Changing Bodies, Growing Up, and Whatnot. A recent one was Bridge to Terabithia for language. It's very... classic children's title that's taught in the schools. Political Power of Mitt Romney was another example of one getting into politics. Go the Bleep to Sleep, which was a...
thank you for using the euphemism. Doing the edit key, keeping the FCC happy.
Which was a sarcastic title based on a children's title. And it was published in a way that it looks like a children's book, but it was intended for adults, and it was very popular. Uh-huh. But people were concerned that it would get in the hands of children just being in the library. So they wanted us to remove it. So it's interesting the spectrum that we face of challenges. Recently we had a minor check out a book that was erotic fiction, and The Guardian found it, and it could have been a teaching moment to realize that child was interested at that age in learning more about it, and getting the right book would have been a good response. You know, let's get a book that's more appropriate to your age rather than an adult fiction title. Mm-hmm. And that would have been a great learning moment for that child, but instead it was challenged and very, very visually.
Travis, does this ever work? I mean, attempting to ban, because I'm thinking in my own case, it would be somewhat similar to what Corey was talking about with the small town in Missouri, I think it was, Republic,
yes.
Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
You tell me I can't read something, and suddenly that becomes the thing I really, really,
oh,
really
absolutely.
Want to read.
Absolutely. You know, I think it's interesting. Rarely does it work, and it just often causes a lot of hassle. I think what I find most fascinating is that the people who are trying to do the banning often have never read the book, don't know anything about the book, aren't even directly involved with it. I mean, you know, Corey mentioned with the Vonnegut book, you know, here is a person who wasn't even in the school who was trying to ban it. One book that we've been carrying at the bookstore, John Green's Looking for Alaska. Absolutely wonderful,
yes.
book. And mm-hmm. and it was a novel that a school district in outside of Buffalo, New York, a couple years ago was considering banning. And this is a book that's written for teenagers, has been used in many high school English classes. And the English class that was using this book had sent out notification to the parents, and parents could opt in or not. So the parents had the choice. Other parents, whose kids weren't even in the classroom, said, you know what, we don't want anyone reading this book because there's a scene that deals with oral sex in the book. And so they tried to ban it. And, you know, and I've heard John Green speak about this, and that the scene itself was about how actually physical intimacy can be so removed from actual intimacy. And it's followed immediately by a scene that's kind of the reverse, the opposite, where, you know, there actually is a very intimate moment that has nothing to do with physicality or sexuality. And that if you read the book, you clearly see mm-hmm. that what he's actually saying is like, look, this is not the way to go about connecting intimately with somebody. And but yet, you know, someone had heard, oh, there's a scene with sex in it. We have to ban it from our kids, instead of, you know, as Deb just said, you know, use it as a teaching moment. I mean, that's the thing that I think is most frustrating with this, is people who have no connection to who they're trying to ban the books from and who don't even know what it is they're banning. And yet that's what we see repeatedly, you know, coming up with so many of these stories.
That reminds me of that story. I think it must have been. And in the interest of full disclosure, I was the executive director of what was then the Indiana Civil Liberties Union, now the ACLU of Indiana. There was actually, I think it was a successful banning. They managed to challenge and remove James Alexander Thom's Follow the River from the Noblesville school system because of one scene in like a 470-page book, if I recall, where, you know, the tortured husband of the heroine, mentally tortured, is having a nightmare where he's imagining that his wife is being raped, actually, by her captors, and mm-hmm. it's a series of torment. But because it was sexual, mm-hmm. that and that reason alone was the reason to say that this book shouldn't be read by high school students. None of the rest of the book mattered. and the fact that there wasn't even any attempt to try to place it in some kind of context. Mm-hmm. Now, we probably ought to emphasize here that it's not censorship. You do have a right to say that your child shouldn't read something.
Absolutely, of course.
Where this line goes is saying that really it's not, you don't get to make that choice for everyone else, though.
And I'm not sure it's going to work trying to make that choice for your kids either.
No.
If they're in high school and you tell them you're not reading Slaughterhouse-Five, unless you're keeping an eye on them 24 hours a day. You know,
that might be a great way to get them to read it, actually.
Exactly. Yeah.
It is, yeah.
Reverse psychology.
A list of banned books. Mm-hmm. I mean, with the library, Deb, do people come and ask for books that have been banned at this time of year as a
Absolutely.
Show of solidarity?
We do displays where we put the books out, and they get checked out more than ever on our ebook site. That's another place that we're starting to hear challenges is our kids have access to this on their iPad, and I don't know what they're doing on their iPad, so you shouldn't have it in the library collection because I can't see what they're doing. That's where we say parental responsibility comes into play for everything that their child is doing when they're in the library or when they're on the library website or the internet. Parental responsibility is the ultimate judge of what a child should be reading.
What book does Banned Books Week give a boost to the most every year? I
mean, well, the top 10 list probably, Looking for Alaska was one of the titles in 2012.
Of course, John Green doesn't need a whole lot of help.
He does not.
I think he's moving a lot of books all by himself.
But I think the popularity of 50 Shades of Grey is because of a challenge. Actually, it was a successful ban in a Florida library a couple years ago that just made it skyrocket to popularity. And so that's, you know, gotten a lot of play for it. Another one recently is The Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian by Sherman Alexie is a really, it's being boosted in sales and interest.
Now, why are people challenging that one? Just curious.
That one, I believe, has homosexuality and sexually explicit scenes in it.
I read it recently. I don't remember that. Just curious.
So there's quite a few books that become more interesting to people because
they've been
banned.
It actually can have help you with the marketing. We are talking about Banned Books Week here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Travis DiNicola of Indy Reads, Deb Lambert of the Indianapolis Public Library, and Corey Michael Dalton of Kurt Vonnegut Library. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about banned books. We're marking Banned Books Week. My guests are Travis DiNicola of The Art of the Matter and Indy Reads, Deb Lambert of the Indianapolis Public Library, and Corey Michael Dalton of the Kurt Vonnegut Library. We were talking about books that have been banned. I'd like to just ask each one of you, what's your biggest head scratcher on this where you think, okay, somebody challenged that and I don't have a clue why? Well, I'll go with you first, Travis.
Oh, you know, the one that I hear so frequently being banned is still Catcher in the Rye. And I mean, that's such a, you know, a 20th century American classic. And it's astounding that that one's banned. The other one that shows up quite a bit is Animal Farm, that, you know, that somehow it's so subversive to have these, you know, pigs talking about communism that we can't let that get in the hands of our children.
I think kind of missed the point that it really doesn't. Yeah, it just doesn't work. Corey, how about you?
The strangest one I thought was The Cat in the Hat, because apparently it was encouraging kids to be anarchists. So go Cat. But the one that I find most personally sort of offensive is To Kill a Mockingbird, because it's one of my all-time favorite books. And so people will say, oh, well, this book is racist because it uses the N-word. When if you read the book, as we said, you know, these people are missing the forest for the trees. It's a profoundly anti-racist book. And yes, it uses that word to illustrate the evils of racism. So to just say you should ban it because that word's in there is crazy.
Mark Twain books for the same reason. You know, it was from a different time, and the language used at that time was what happened. And we're not facing reality if we aren't reading about what happened at that time.
Yeah, we've gotten an email question from a listener named Jerry who says, please comment upon the efforts to suppress Adventures of Huckleberry Finn, which Ernest Hemingway referred to as the best book ever written by an American. Mm-hmm. You know, even if you disagree with Hemingway's assessment on that, you still got to admit it's a seminal work in American literature. What does that do when you try to suppress something that is that interwoven into, you know, almost every aspect of our culture? I'll start with you, Deb.
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Sure. You know, when you try to suppress something that is so much a part of our culture now, I mean, Huckleberry Finn, we refer to, a lot of people make reference to that book without ever having read it. It always strikes me as funny when people would say they'd had a Huck Finn-like childhood, and I thought, oh, wait, you know, you were abandoned and orphaned and confronted with all sorts of almost psychotic, violent episodes.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that people are trying to suppress the thoughts and actions of others by limiting what they can read, and they are in their own world and think that things should be the way they think they should be and want everyone around them to be that way. And we're a democratic society of freedom of expression, and it's a dichotomy that we have to balance, you know, and other people have to be open to others' ideas.
You know, I'd like to jump in on that, because a couple years ago there was a publication of Adventures of Huck Finn that was written where every time that the N-word was used, it was taken out. Mm-hmm. And as Deb said, you know, that was historically part of the book and allows for a lot of interesting discussion about, well, how was that used? What does that mean within that context? At the same time, you know, I I hate to say this, but, you know, if it's a matter of a parent letting a child read the book with the N-word taken out or not reading the book at all, then I could see how some parents might make that choice and saying, you know, that they still want their child to, you know, read the book but not experience that word. I think they're missing a lot of things, but, you know, that's one area. I'm not going to be in favor of censorship here at all, but it is an interesting point.
Well, that's the
point.
Term, it's like, the batterizing, you know, yeah. the removing objectionable material, mm-hmm. You know, which to some degree,
again, it's yeah. you're not doing it for everybody else in the world. You're doing it maybe just for your specific child. And I think, you know, again, in that situation, parents certainly have all the rights that they want and should mm-hmm. have. But that doesn't mean that they should inflict that on anybody else.
And the library offers a wide variety of materials for everybody. And we have purchased those versions of the Mark Twain books so that you're, you know, reading about Black Jim instead of the other mm-hmm. description of mm-hmm. them. So
I do think, though, in that instance, I mean, I can understand it. Maybe you don't want your kid reading the N-word 5,000 times or however many times it's in that book. But I do think that there should be a conversation. I would hope the parents yes. would have a conversation with their kids before that and say, you know, this is the word that was there, at least to raise the issue and discuss
well,
it with
especially
their kids.
Since I think that scene, you know, where Jim asserts himself after Huck has played the prank on him, and Huck, you know, sort of the huge transitional scene
right.
where he asserts his personhood, his manhood, and says basically, no, you don't get to treat me this way.
Right.
If we're friends, you got to treat me like a friend, and mm-hmm. you can't treat me with this kind of disrespect. Loses a lot of its power if yeah. you don't see him treated
so disrespectfully.
It would
gut the character arc there. Yeah. I mean, it would sort of defeat the purpose. But
we are talking about banned books here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Hugh, welcome to the program. I understand you're calling from rather strange circumstances.
Rather strange. I have managed to duck into a stairwell to try to get some... I'm out of the window, so to speak, for momentarily, so I can speak to you guys.
We're breaking the rules, Hugh. You're not on campus.
This is Hugh Vandiver, who obviously we'd refer
to. I'm on campus. I'm in the building, so I've broken my contract. So.
Well, let me ask this: why are you doing this? I mean, you're giving up a week of your life. And I think we can say almost all of your privacy for this period.
Well, put it that way, Corey should have better informed me.
Sorry, but, Hugh. I didn't want to scare you.
But it is. I'm sacrificing that for bringing greater awareness to banned books and how it struck me very very quickly how easily it is to try to get something banned or to challenge a book. And I think that this is. You know, thanks to Corey for coming up with the idea last year and then and being the pioneer on it. And then when they asked me to do it, I said, yeah, sure. So, but I think I've learned a lot really this week. You know, I didn't presume to come in to be this expert on banned books, but I've definitely learned a lot by mostly from the interaction. I think that besides the physical presence of having me doing this, the biggest conversation starter is that I'm behind a wall, so to speak, about 2 feet high, surrounding me, my work live space mm-hmm. of banned, challenged, and threatened books. And that's the thing that people, their eyes go down and their eyes catch on a title, whether it's Where the Wild Things Are or The Outsiders or The Giver. And their eyes go wide and they say, that was banned. Mm-hmm. And I think that also, too, to remind people that these kind of things are going on right now. I mean, we just had a resolution to a challenge in North Carolina. I'm not sure if it was covered, for Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man, and that just got resolved last night. The school board finally rescinded, and that book has not been banned. So, and I think that however many ways that we can encourage people to. In their PTAs, in their communities, in their libraries, when these books are challenged by certain individuals, it's the duty of all of us to remind those people that we have a great First Amendment and we need to protect it. by doing, we need to all have the courage to stand up and do that whenever challenges arise.
Before I let you go back onto display here in just a moment, let me ask, you know, when you're doing this for this week, what is the book that has been banned that really, really drives you? Is the one that you most want to defend?
It is, in my mind, a great American classic, and it speaks to our American character and our quiet dignity that most of us Americans have. And I'm talking about To Kill a Mockingbird. And the biggest travesty was that it has been challenged. I heard the story this week. It has been challenged because it has racism in it. And I thought that was the point of the book. So the irony is inescapable, and I think there's a lot of children's books, you know, children's classics that we hold dear: Charlotte's Web, Winnie the Pooh, Where the Wild Things Are. Mm-hmm. Those are astounding to me that there's such a protective nature for our kids, and there should be, but at the same time, parents should be ready to answer questions. Kids are always going to ask awkward questions, and there's always that moment when a six-year-old asks a question that a 12-year-old should be asking, and you get caught off guard. And we should all be okay to sit to stumble and fret and guide our kids through those awkward questions, because the more that we don't answer those questions, the more they'll seek answers up other places, and who better than a parent or an uncle or somebody to help guide those kids through those answers.
How much longer are you living behind the window here? How much longer do you have?
My incarceration ends Saturday at 5 o'clock.
Well, good luck with that, and thank you very much for calling in.
Thanks. Thank you.
Take care. Well, we've also gotten an email question from a listener named AJ. Morris Story says, my mom taught me to read before I ever entered kindergarten, and I quickly became an avid reader. By the time I was in fourth grade, I had exhausted the library's children's section and moved to the adult section. I'll never forget the day when I tried to check out both Love Story and The Godfather, and the librarian refused me because I was only a child. I headed home and told my mom, who loaded me into the car, and we drove back to the library, where she read the librarian the Riot Act, explaining that I was a competent reader and was to be allowed to check out anything and everything I wanted. She would decide if something I brought home was inappropriate. It was a wonderful way to have my right to read so strongly protected, and that freedom gave me a wonderful free education. Thank you, Mom. I mean, that, I imagine, Deb, you're nodding your head as a librarian, is actually kind of the story you like to hear.
Actually, I've heard that countless times in different parts of the country, that same story, where in past days, librarians were more restrictive on what was being checked out. And things have changed. Librarians are more about encouraging reading at many levels. And we know that there's different maturity levels of different children, and it's up to the parent to help guide that child.
We are talking about banned books in honor of Banned Books Week here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Regina, welcome to the program.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Well, a few things. I had the same experience that the last caller had. My mom... Well, actually, I didn't have a librarian refuse me. After I had exhausted all the books in my local library's collection, in the children's collection, my mom took me there and spoke to the librarian and said, I want her to be allowed to use the adult section. So I had to have her permission to do it, or she must have guessed. But the question that I had was, my mom also gave me Harriet the Spy, and I heard that mentioned, and I can't imagine why. That was banned. It was my favorite book in third grade, I think. And then I don't have children of my own, but I gave it to a very much loved niece when she was about that age, too.
Well, thank you very much for the call and the story, Regina. And I'm going to try to get some idea of why Harriet the Spy, although I think these people probably don't get it either, would have been banned. But thanks again for the call. What is the, Deb, what is the reason that people challenge Harriet the Spy?
It teaches independence and to be contrary to adults sometimes in some of those books, and that's why parents have issues with some children's books.
You know, my children didn't need to be taught that. They figured that out all on their own. But we've gotten a call from a listener who didn't want to go on the air, who said wanted to discuss former Governor Daniels' practice of banning a textbook which was characterized as liberal economic philosophy. Caller says he tried to ban it in the lower grades. Will the panel discuss this? I should say we're going to have former Governor Daniels on the show here in a couple of weeks to talk about this. So this issue of academic freedom. Travis.
I think to be clear here, he didn't actually try to ban it. He questioned it and definitely had some issues with the book. Did not want it to be included in teacher education classes and wanted to know if it was included in any public school classes. But and there may be issues with that, and I disagree absolutely with Daniel's assessment of Zinn's book. But
and we should say, but we should mention the name of Howard Zinn.
Howard Zinn's People's History of the United States. But to be clear, Daniels did not actually try to ban it, I believe. Is that
his language was very strong, though. If I remember the emails correctly, I don't have them with me, but he was not a fan. Let's put it that
clearly,
way.
Clearly, yeah.
But and it's funny that this came up, actually, because the governor was at the Vonnegut Library yesterday with his wife, and our former governors, didn't care for Howard Zinn's book. So today at the Vonnegut Library is Howard Zinn Day, and they're having presentations this evening. You can check the website for that. So if you want to learn more about Howard Zinn's People History of the U.S., go to the library tonight. He was actually one of our first advisory board members for the Vonnegut Library. Howard Zinn was shortly before his death.
So it's sort of a family celebration.
Think that what was fascinating was that as soon as the article came out about Daniel's objection to Zinn's book, that it became like one of the Amazon's bestsellers.
I know. That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, and at Indie Reads Books, we can't keep it in. Yeah.
I know. We have I've got several friends who bought it. And I have to admit, when it came up, the whole story, it blew up. I'd read Howard Zinn years ago when I was in grad school and really hadn't read a whole lot of his work since then. I went back to it and I, again, kind of scratched my head and wondered what the fuss was all about.
Yeah.
But what it did, are you able to keep Howard Zinn's books in the library now, or did former Governor Daniels create a real demand for Zinn's
work? They're pretty popular books, and we have multiple copies of them. I think it's interesting, that another governor, former governor of Alaska, was big on banning books in the Alaskan public libraries. I don't know if you remember that a few years ago. But this current governor in Indiana made a proclamation this week making it Banned Books Week, September 28th through 28th in Indiana, too. So it's great that we have recognition of the issue for banning books and not banning books, challenging books in the state of Indiana.
Are there any books that I'll flip this conversation around. Are there any books that that any of you think would be appropriate to challenge, to just say that shouldn't be in front of a child? Corey, you're nodding your head.
I mean, I think if something is clearly pornography, and there are legal definitions, I believe, of pornography, that's not something that you want to be handing to a six-year-old. So
it's a little tricky. I mean, Supreme Court Justice who defined it said, basically, I can't really define it. I just know it when I see it.
So, it's like art I like. I don't know. Deb, you might have a better idea on what the definition would be.
Well, the way the library works is that we have clearly defined collection for children versus adults. And teens are an interesting entity right now because the teen publishing industry has exploded. And there's a lot of, realism in those books. So that's the way we manage it. We have professionals that were trained and hired to make these decisions and put them in certain parts of the collection. So yes, there are materials that are not appropriate for children, and we recognize that, and we put it in a designated area for adults. Yeah.
We are talking about Banned Books Week here on No Limits in honor of the fact that this is Banned Books Week and there are all sorts of celebrations going on in town. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Travis DiNicola of Indie Reads, Deb Lambert of the Indianapolis Public Library, and Corey Michael Dalton of the Kurt Vonnegut Library. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about banned books in honor of Banned Books Week. Here on No Limits, my guests are Travis DiNicola of The Art of the Matter, and he's here with Indy Reads, Deb Lambert, who is with the Indianapolis Public Library, and Corey Michael Dalton with the Kurt Vonnegut Library. We've gotten an email question from a listener named Pam, who says, in 1964, I was a junior in high school in Cincinnati. I was fortunate to have an AP English teacher who truly made a difference. Our local school board had banned Catcher in the Rye. Our teacher suggested to our class that if we all just happened to buy Catcher in the Rye from the school bookmobile and then wanted to discuss it in class, he really couldn't object. What a great lesson on so many levels. Stories like that that pop up of sort of a spontaneous response to a book. Well, not so spontaneous. I mean, there is some orchestration there. You know, how often do we see things like that, Deb, across the country where people say, I mean, I remember a few years ago, actually, when I was working at the newspaper and William Styron was going to be the McFadden lecturer that year, I happened for a story to be teaching for a week at a public high school in the area, and they were dealing with the Holocaust. And I said, well, you know, why don't we have these kids read Sophie's Choice and then go to the lecture? And the word came back that they weren't enthusiastic about using that book because there is a, you know, a fairly elaborate sex scene in it late in the book for a high school audience. And when I mentioned to Styron afterwards, he said, well, heck, you should have told me. I just would have given them all the books then. Is that a fairly frequent response?
Yes. And what's interesting is that these books are teaching teens to be individuals and to be independent. And the fact that we're trying to restrict their access to them, you know, restricts their learning of how to, you know, get these skills and be independent in life. So they're happening in school libraries, public libraries all over the country. And we've got some great teachers out there that are finding ways to educate our students in new ways.
We are talking about banned books here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can connect with us via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Krista, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for taking my call. I just wanted to comment that I am an English professor of beat literature, and I was just so thrilled to hear that Howl is going to be part of the celebration of Banned Books Week at the Vonnegut Library Friday night. I kind of feel like, you know, that those authors and artists still kind of get, you know, the juvenile delinquent treatment, and I've certainly got a little bit of blowback when I first suggested teaching the course I teach. And again, I just want to express my appreciation and admiration for bringing literature like that out into the public sphere. It should be out there a lot more often than what it is. Unfortunately, even to this day, Hal still can't be played on the radio or on public airwaves like until after midnight, which I think is a travesty. So,
well, thank you very much for the call, Krista.
You're welcome.
Yeah, part of the reason it can't be played is because fairly early on in the poem, there's the same word that we had to bleep with go to bleep to sleep.
Thanks for bringing that up, though, about the Vonnegut Library, because that will be Friday night. And that was actually a real passion project for Hugh, who is the poor guy locked in the library. So he really wanted to do that. So
Howell in particular?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we probably ought to explain that for people who don't get it, the Beats were a collection of American writers and in the interest of full disclosure, I should say, when I was in grad school, I also taught a course on the Beat literature of the Beat Generation, who did stretch. Howell was part of a famous censorship case in the 50s with City Lights books and all of that. Mm-hmm. We've gotten an email question from a listener named Jack. Actually, not so much a a question as Travis, I think he's taking you to task here.
Okay.
He says, I must disagree strongly with the panelist's belief that it is okay to change books that have objectionable language. The removal alters the book and its impact. We cannot change everything we find offensive. These instances are chances to teach, and the reader may really feel the impact of the offensive word, in this case, which may be lost if the book is changed. We have no right to alter an artist's work. We should not cover the Statue of David because we find nudity offensive, likewise, and we should not change any book. The book 1984 shows the impact of changing the past. Ironic that this topic should come up today. Thanks for the great discussion. You want to respond, Travis?
Yeah, and I probably need to clarify my comments because I certainly don't think the book should be changed. I think that the language should be left intact and should be discussed and talked about. All I was saying was that I thought it was an interesting way of approaching the subject, one that I don't totally agree with, but, you know, if a parent is in a situation where they really feel that they object to a certain word for their children and choose to check out of the library or buy a copy of the book that has, you know, one word changed in it so that the child can read the rest of the book in its entirety, you know, that's a parent's choice. It's not something I would want inflicted on anybody else. Don't think that it's not removing the book. It's not changing the book for the rest of the public. It's for one specific instance. And if a parent chooses to do that, that's their choice. It's not something I would choose to ever do, though.
We are talking about banned books here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. Stephen, welcome to the program.
Hello, thanks for taking my call.
Certainly, I understand you. Yeah, you know one of our panelists.
Yes, I happen to be Coy's father. So, you know, his intelligence spraying for me, I'm quite sure.
Oh my gosh.
I got a couple of comments to make.
Sure.
First of all, this is a hot button for me because in my life I've seen the greatest problems society have is the people trying to impose their view of morality on others, and this is an example of that. And I encourage everyone to go to the Vonnegut Library and see Hugh in action. It's really entertaining. From doing that last year, I got one of Vonnegut's book, Cat's Cradle. Now I want to go through all of them. So it's certainly worth your time, and it's a good cause. And finally, I have a question for Corey. How does it feel to be on the radio on your birthday?
Feels great, Dad. Thanks.
Well, I think you.
Yeah, thanks for slipping that birthday.
Yeah, fulfilled the father's function.
At least he didn't say your age.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, happy birthday, Corey.
Thanks, Travis. Thank you very much for the call, Stephen.
Thanks for taking it.
Certainly.
John, one other thing I would like to add, too, the comment before mentioned, you know, covering up David and stuff, it's not just banned books. I mean, art is banned, or people have objections to art as well as theater and music. I mean, really all of the creative arts go through this challenge. I mean, it happens to be banned books week, and that's what we're here to talk about, but it's certainly not limited to literature.
I'm going to ask, are there books that at one time were being challenged all the time and now have kind of fallen off the list? I mean, I remember in my days when I was at the ACLU, remember getting calls saying, okay, we're finding that the very first Harry Potter book was being challenged a lot. And in fact, we did for a while marathon readings of banned books week to mark, and we did the Harry Potter book the first year. It was the first time I had, you know, my daughter was way too small for the books at that time, had read it, and I couldn't find what the objection was. I also thought, okay, after now 50 years of stories and worry and hand-wringing about the fact that, you know, Johnny and Janie can't read, someone has figured out a way to tell a story that gets these kids reading, not just reading, but standing in line for 12 hours as if it were a rock concert. So that they can buy the book to stay up for the next 3 days straight reading it, and we somehow want to discourage that. Are those books still being challenged, Deb?
Not nearly as much as they used to, but They are still occasionally because of witchcraft and being, you know, the religious point of view is what
Mary
challenged
that. Out of curiosity, is Mary Poppins challenged for the same reason?
Times change. And an interesting thing is, you know, what comes into the limelight. Ender's Game is an interesting situation that's going on right now, written by Orson Scott Card, who is very political about the Marriage Equality Act. And there are people who are banning his movie, or boycotting his movie that's coming out, or anything that, you know, earns him another dollar because they believe he's putting his money into the campaign against their political issues. So there's another, you know, aspect of banning books and materials because it's not anything in the actual book or the content of the movie or the book, it's the political views of the author.
Well, I have to say, though, I don't think anybody's advocating banning his book or taking it out of libraries. It's just people making, well, there may be.
And that's a First Amendment choice, though, to say I might not want to.
Right. I'm not going to go see his movie because I don't support him and he is giving money to the organizations. But I'm not saying take his movie away.
Actually, I've heard people say you shouldn't be buying more copies of his books.
Really?
You know, and so it's because more popular.
They try to say it for the library.
Yes. That, yes.
Well, I guess that demonstrates that, you know, that a somewhat repressive mindset can come from almost any point on the spectrum.
Yep.
We've gotten a comment from a listener via Twitter, a tweet, says, I think books that are edited for their portrayal of race relations in history take away from the gravity of those situations / events. Corey, is there a sense really that, you know, we do attempt to sanitize reality? When we do that?
Certainly, yeah. I mean, when they, like the Huck Finn example, when they tried to sanitize the use of the word, and to defend Travis, he was not saying this is what they should be doing.
Thanks, Corey.
Yeah. He's just saying
to be clear, what he was saying yes. is if there's no other way the kid is going to read
right.
the book,
it's the parents'
let's
choice.
Get the book in front of the
if
kid.
If it's
somehow.
Between the parents saying you're not going to read the book at all or you're going to read this bolderized version, then he'd rather do that.
You know, but we do that all the time with television. I mean, look at network television, movies, you know, that are edited down for their content. It's not what is preferable by any means. But again, you know, and John, just to echo what you said, if it's the parents' choice to say my child's not going to read Huck Finn or they're going to read it in this version, I don't think it's a great choice, but at least I think it's a slightly better choice to read it an edited version than not read it at all.
And restricting that is another form of restriction, you know, of controlling what other people want to do.
Yeah.
You
see
what I'm saying?
Yeah. Kind of a reverse in that way.
Exactly.
Yeah. Not a great choice, but.
Well, in terms of are there other books out there, like we've talked about Ender's Games, and the author's name, I think, is Orson Scott Card, right? Right now that are sort of freshly entering the lists of banned books. I know we talked about 50 Shades of Grey, which is relatively recent, and John Green obviously is exploded like a comet.
The Bluest Eye by Toni Morrison was just one of her brand new book has been banned in Ohio by a school, and it's her home state too. So what a blow. there are examples of new books that are being published and being banned.
Are there, you know, when this process of banning a book, I mean, Hugh made the reference when he called in, Hugh Vandiver, who's at the Vonnegut Library, made reference to the fact that there was a case in North Carolina. How do we track this? I mean, how do we know about these instances? Is it just anecdotal if something pops up, or is there somebody who actually pays attention to the challenges, Deb?
Online nowadays, the news travels about this type of thing instantly. Interesting, our story about the challenge of the erotic fiction in the 9-year-old got legs across the country. It went to Australia and Canada. It was on, you know, Fox 59 News here, and it got picked up by AOL News and the Huffington Post. So when something like that happens, it's just spread like wildfire these days.
And Corey, do you track how many times Kurt Vonnegut's books get challenged?
I don't personally know, and I don't know if there is a central database, Deb, that sort of tracks this stuff. But I mean, I think that's why we're all here, is to raise this issue. I mean, for example, the banning.
In some ways, it's sort of the keeping a centralized database would be the antithesis of the idea.
Yeah, I suppose so.
There is a website, banbookweek.org, I think, that tries to track it, mm-hmm. but it's just a fraction of what's out there.
But that's why I think people like us need to make a fuss when this stuff does happen. Mm-hmm. I mean, like the Republic, Missouri example with Slaughterhouse-Five, I mean, that the fact that the Vonnegut Library sent free copies of the book to those kids, that got all over the news. So then that raises the awareness and makes people aware that, oh my gosh, in today's day and age, they're actually telling high school students that Slaughterhouse-Five is too dirty for them to read. Crazy.
We are talking about banned books here on No Limits. Bill, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Hi. What's on your mind?
Well, I just wanted to say I was fortunate enough in high school to have an AP English, or history teacher, rather, who actually taught Howard Zinn. And at the time, I remember that book absolutely blowing my mind as a 16-year-old growing up in, you know, between South Bend and Elkhart. And only after I got to college did I look back and realize what a gift that teacher had given that class by introducing all these things that had happened in U.S. history that I guess conventional textbooks hadn't dealt with, or at least not the ones that I had read. And as a teacher and as an actor, and I think it's very important that teachers try to teach these books as much as possible, even in the face of communities that are trying to ban them. I think what was miraculous about where I grew up was that I'm sure that a lot of the parents knew that book, that we were reading that book, but yet somehow he taught that book year after year after year after year. And maybe it was because it was an AP class and people didn't challenge it, or it was only a select few. But I do think that it's a responsibility of teachers to try and get those books into those kids' hands as much as possible. And I know you've already had some comments along those lines. But I think that's something important that the teachers can give those sorts of gifts to students. I mean, kids not even realize at the moment they're happening what has been given to them.
Thank you very much for the call, Bill. I'm curious. I remember talking with the writer Margaret Atwood, who actually has the theory that we live now in a far more repressive age than the 1950s. She said, as long as you wore a coat and a tie in the 1950s, you could pretty much say or do whatever you wanted. And now that's not the case. I mean, do we actually see more kind of repression or attempts to suppress literature these days than we would have 50 years ago? I'll start with you, Travis.
You know, I'm not sure. That's a very interesting question. I'd love to sort of know the numbers historically. And I'd be surprised if there were if the attempts were that different. I think it's something that's part of sort of, unfortunately, the nature of society, that some people want to control what other information is getting out there. Perhaps what we're better at doing now is defeating those attempts, that we hear about them frequently, but, you know, by efforts, you know, like libraries and like what the Vonnegut Library does, you know, these attempts are not successful.
Corey, I'm going to give you about 10 seconds and then Deb about 10 seconds.
I mean, I can't speak to historically, but I do think that in today's world with social media and Twitter and everything, that it's hard to suppress ideas, even unpopular ones. And I think that's the important thing that we need to stress, too, is that, you know, you should always be discussing the ideas that are the minority and the unpopular ideas, just to raise the issues and either come away with your side, you know, feeling further supported or changing your mind.
I'm sorry, Deb. I'm afraid that is going to have to be the last word. We have been talking about Banned Books Week here on No Limits. My guests have been Travis DiNicola, Deb Lambert, and Corey Michael Dalton. I am John Kroll. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.